Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. Joining us here in studio, as he always does on a Tuesday, we have Chip Simmons. He is the Escambia County Sheriff. Sheriff, welcome back, sir. Good to have you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good. So let's see. We're, searching for a bank robber, basically, right?
We are, yeah. Some dude came in. I say dude. He appears to be heavily disguised when either a wig.
That's not his original hair.
It could be. Could be his original glasses. Could be original tattoos. Who knows? But we did put the picture out on our social media platform. It's been widely circulated. We're looking for this guy. And if anyone has information on him or what a vehicle he may have gotten into, we're certainly looking at all avenues at this point. It's very rare that we have a bank robbery nowadays.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like everyone's like, really? Do we really have a bank robbery? You don't get the money you used to. I guess in the 40s and 30s.
When you could tell people, stick them up, see?
Yeah,
stick them up.
And you take the whole, open the safe.
Yeah.
You know, that's not really the way it works anymore. However, we are looking for this guy. It's very serious. He didn't have a weapon, as I understand it, but he passed a note. And he got away with an undisclosed amount of cash. Not a lot, but an undisclosed amount of cash. And we're looking for him. So if you know of him, if you've recognized that wig or that information, please let us know.
Now, would this be a situation? I mean, I assume the answer is yes, because literally the Supreme Court case about geofence warrants was a bank robbery. So is this the kind of case where you've gone and, you know, asked for the data on cell phones because that would allow you to identify who had phones in the vicinity, and then you could be able to narrow down your search, maybe connect with a license plate reader and a tag and that kind of stuff?
This is the type of case that we would do that, yes.
Yeah, okay. Yes. All right.
For your listeners, what we're talking about is we can do a search warrant for the phones that pinged in that area at that time, and then we can
like
isolate,
anything within 100 yards of the bank, right, between right. The 1230 and 1250 or whatever.
Right. You know. Very strict guidelines on, mm-hmm. on what we can access. But it's the same thing with when we do a wiretap or a phone tap, we'll call it T3. There's, you know, we don't just listen to every single conversation that a person has. We have what they call minimization, and we have to be signed in, and we have to do all kinds of protocols and all kinds of safeguards so that we, what you do is you minimize the call, and you come back up periodically. Nope, still talking about, you know, magnolias, and then go back
down.
Got
it. So personal communications unrelated to potential crimes don't get recorded. Don't get monitored.
Yeah, I don't think people realize that, but that's just
no. I didn't realize that either.
I
thought once you had the tap in place that you essentially recorded everything and then went back through it, but you actually minimize as it's happening the things that are irrelevant to what you're talking about.
Yeah, everything is recorded, but you minimize what you can hear, and then you log what's evidentiary.
I see.
And you
okay.
only go back to that in that portion of it is evidentiary.
Okay, so you do go back and have the ability to query it. But what makes geofence warrants so different is the record, you didn't know to create the record. The record was created by the private company that operates the telecom or the social media or whatever you're using. And you're going back to query that, whereas like with a wiretap, you now have the permission to create the record from which you draw information. So it's a little, I think it's a fascinating law enforcement technique precisely because you're going back to create as if you were looking in a search back in time kind of, and you know.
Well, I think it's important to note that these are not done just
for run-of-the-mill things, right.
You need to have a search warrant with specifically telling or asking a judge, this is what we're looking for, this is where we'll find it, and that's all that we're looking for. And then it was within this period of time, and then we have to do what we call a return to the judiciary and say, this is what we've collected.
It's a very regulated process.
Absolutely.
With very specific parameters.
As you would expect.
Of course.
As we all support.
Let's see. We also have an upgrade on some charges. This is the case with the women who had the children that were poorly treated, a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old. And you guys have now gotten what? Enhanced charges against them, right?
Yeah. If you remember, this is the lady brought, I think it's a 3-year-old, into a medical facility. And when a doctor looked at the child, was like, oh my, this needs to be reported.
Mm-hmm.
He stepped out for a second. She took the child and took off this. So we were able to use license plate readers. We determined where she was, stopped her, saved the children, for lack of a better term. And then we charged them at the time with felony and neglect for not providing the care, for leaving.
Yeah.
But we always kind of thought, well, you know, we have to decide who did the actual abuse, who caused the damage, severe damage to these children, very young children too, by the way. And our investigators have done a jam-up job. They have arrested and now charged these two, not just with the felony neglect, but also with the child abuse itself.
and they're in jail on $1 million bond. Well, one isn't on $1 million, one's on $500,000. So very, very serious charges, obviously.
Yeah. And this is very complicated. There's biological children, there's foster children, there's a number of different programs where they've gone in and out of. We arrested an individual at a daycare because these particular children were at a daycare, and they had on three separate instances that documented abuse, but they failed to call the hotline. We talked a lot about that. So this is that. This is all that investigation. We've not completed the investigation. We're still looking at trying to again unravel some of what happened, how it happened, and whether any of that meets the criminal nature.
And what I think about in this particular case is, we know about these ones and we're prosecuting these ones, and there are, I am sure, loads of other cases that we just don't realize, don't know about. The things don't rise to this level. People don't become aware. But it is, it's weirdly for me, it's very satisfying to see at least one make the news, be prosecuted, and make neglectors or abusers think twice, you know, maybe about what they're doing, because anything that's going to help these kids not suffer, you know,
I agree. You know, in my mind, it's also a reminder to others. You know what? Mm-hmm. Oh, wait a minute. I think I know someone that might be doing that. And I didn't realize I was supposed to report.
Mandatory report, right, for all humans, not just doctors and social workers and teachers, right?
Yeah, so there's a deterrent effect, but there's also this reminder and awareness, if you will, our children are our most precious commodity.
If you see something with kids, you better say something. Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. For the business with Orange Beach, would it be inaccurate to describe it as trafficking homeless people across state lines?
Trafficking to me in law enforcement has kind of like a different connotation.
Particularly with regards to sex and slavery and that kinds of stuff.
Well,
okay.
And drugs. And so okay. I don't really know. All I know is that they, on at least two occasions now that we know of, though we have heard tale of many times this has taken place. In fact, since this has gone public, if you will, I've been inundated with phone calls and texts. Yeah, I live here, and this is what's going on. This is why we don't have homeless either, because I've seen it happening, and it's just not right.
And not just Orange Beach PD, but other agencies?
That's correct. Other entities as well. Yeah. And the thing is, it's a drain on our limited resources mm-hmm. that we have to help the homeless that we have in here that's either native to Escambia County or those that are passing through. And we're not saying that we're not closing our borders or anything, because we understand there are nonprofits that are still transporting people into Escambia County with the two other nonprofits here. And I'm trying to get my head wrapped around just how many are coming here, because we have been trying in earnest to try to help those that are homeless, specifically mm-hmm. those in certain areas around the Waterfront Rescue Mission. That's why we were there. That's why our deputy was there and saw an Orange Beach police car way, way out of the jurisdiction, out of their state. And we're like, what do you need some help? You need some help, buddy? Yeah. What's going on here? We didn't know you were doing an operation. come to find out, their claim again, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but their claim is that he wanted to, you know, I guess he knocked on the door and said, hey, buddy, give me a ride to, can I catch a ride with you to Escambia County, Florida? and they decided, yeah, we'll go ahead and do that. Even though when he got here, he said, I don't want services here at Waterfront Rescue Mission. I really want to go to my home in Jacksonville, Alabama.
Oh, my goodness.
And I'm like, oh, okay, that sounds vastly different than you know, a benevolent car ride.
Right.
But anyways, I just wanted to know why it's happening. That's the first question was, why is this happening? Why is someone bringing someone way over here? Now, there is a program. It's true. It's a program where entities, not just Escambia County, the sheriff's office doesn't do it, but the Escambia County does, where they will offer bus rides if you had somewhere specific to go and someone that would accept you. You're going to a family member.
Back home.
Yeah, going back home. You know, that's not the case in this particular situation.
Right.
You know, heck, if this is the case, I'll go down there, and I'm sure probably 50 people would love just a free ride to Orange Beach.
this may be a terrible analogy, but it's one that comes to mind. It's like they're treating homeless people like they're leaves that they can just leaf blower into your yard, and then it's not in their yard anymore. And now you got to take care of the problem. You know, you got to deal with it. There's no crime particularly here, but it's inappropriate. I mean, it feels such an undescription to say it's unneighborly, you know, but it's just weird.
Well, that's the ironic part. Someone said, well, that's not, you know, this is not a cooperative spirit that you're giving there, Sheriff. Wait a minute.
Why should we? Why are we taking them
to my county? That's the epitome of not being a cooperative spirit. But you know, I as I understand it, there's a conversation that has.
Well, I mean, literally, Mayor shoots his mouth off, called you not gentlemanly. Because, I mean,
yeah,
and he's got some of his own issues. Yeah. Okay, we won't get into all of it.
That's cute coming from their mayor. Yeah.
Look, do some searching. I'll just put it that way. Do some searching anyway.
Yeah, and there's a lot of things that I could say that I have said.
You've restrained a lot. Yeah,
so yeah. I think I've been very, my mom would be proud of me.
Oh, look at that. Are they working with you yet? Are they working with you?
No one's calling me. I had
even
initially,
like city council, nobody's
I
like
had a
PD?
Conversation with their police chief and their county administrator and quite frankly, they were telling me that it's just a nice car ride. That's what they do over in Alabama. They're nice people. And I'm sure many of them are, but I wasn't buying it.
Yeah,
I was like, look, I know what's going on. You're not talking to someone. It's not my first day on the job. This is in 1971. You're not, you know, picking up John Rambo and kicking him off at the county line.
Sheriff Teasel, come on.
Yeah, it's not. I'm not buying it.
So what can you do? I mean, there's no crime here, right? What power do you have?
No crime. I'm not accusing them of a crime. I can tell you there are very strict guidelines and rules on what we can do with a homeless individual here in Escambia County. We can't just force them to leave. If they're in a public area, we can't say you can't be here.
Yeah.
You can't say you can get anywhere you want to, but you can't be in my town. Well, we can't do that. That is illegal. And so we're really just making people aware, Escambia County citizens aware. The homeless situation that we're battling every day, that, you know, a lot of those people are not from around here. A lot of those people are being dropped off here. And your tax, at least a portion of your tax dollars, are going towards, you know, towards these services.
And your charitable dollars, too. I mean, you know, because, you know, like we give to Waterfront and, you know, that's,
right.
You know, I don't mind helping people. We like helping people, but still, you know, I want to help our people first because they're our people. That's kind of my community obligation.
Yeah, I do want to make sure. I think I said city, county administrator, really city manager at Orange Beach. I just
gotcha.
Make sure that we're clear. We're not talking about Baldwin County.
Okay, got it.
About Orange Beach.
Jimmy Patronis, as you know, has proposed to decriminalize, legalize, make it easier for basically anybody who can buy a gun to buy a machine gun. That would, you know, make your old pre-1986 ban machine guns not be worth very much. So the people who own them are probably not that happy about it. But for people who want to own an automatic, an Uzi or a Thompson or an AK-47 or an AR-15 or whatever in a fully automatic form, if this bill ever does pass, that would be legal. You're the law enforcement guy. You know, we talked with Sheriff Johnson about this yesterday, but, you know, everybody had pistols. They bought semi-automatic, you know, they bought Glocks, you bought Glocks. They bought rifles, you bought rifles. They buy fully automatic weapons. What do you do? It's a different world if the criminals are running around with, you know, fully automatic weapons, right? I mean.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I look at things from a law enforcement perspective. I'm a adamant supporter of the Second Amendment. Now, I have not had a conversation with Jimmy Patronis about this. And I have not, nor have I seen that what it actually says. I'm conflicted. While I do believe that you should have the right to keep and bear arms, I also think that as you just point out, if we have individuals out there with automatic weapons and the law enforcement officers are outgunned, you recall the big case over there in California, I think something happened in Miami with FBI. When law enforcement is outgunned, then you've got problems. I mean, you no longer can control the bad guys that may be carrying these things. And if you think a bad guy is going to right now steal a handgun or some kind of a rifle, they're certainly going to look and steal an automatic weapon. And I think that it's very concerning to me. And to your point, I think that the second that this is legalized, that I'm going to have to start buying automatic weapons for every one of my deputies. Because I can't send a deputy out there with a pistol and you got everyone else walking around openly carrying fully automatic weapons like we're in Beirut.
Yeah, because, I mean, open carry would, you know, I mean, that's a concern as well, right? But the way I think about it is I'm hesitant to be no on anything that's pro-gun.
Right, I'm with you.
But I think about, I mean, it would be fun to have one. I've shot them, you know, with one of your deputies, actually, with Lieutenant Kilgan. But, do I need that for anything that I would need a gun for? And my answer is no, not really. I mean, it's mostly just fun. But the kind of person who wants to do mass damage, all of a sudden you're giving them, I mean, I know a semi-automatic can do a lot of damage, and that's why it doesn't really matter to me because it's enough for me. But if somebody wants to, you know, shoot up a crowd, I mean, they would rather have a machine gun. And that seems more likely to be abused by the wrong people than to be used for any legitimate Second Amendment purpose by the right people. And that's what concerns me about it, especially because I don't want to see the cops outgunned again, you know, and that's, I think, right, what would happen.
Well, I mean, it would happen on day one, starting on day one. I mean, I'm not saying everyone would be walking around with them. We have open carry, and people aren't necessarily walking around with
not a lot
with
of
weapons
it in Scambia.
But there
yeah.
are some. Yeah. There are a few out there with AR strapped to their back, semi-automatic rifles. And I think
here in Scambia, have you seen that?
We've seen them, but very rarely.
Interesting. Okay,
they're just going from because they can't go everywhere, right? they can't even get in and out of their car.
Not getting into public like
back.
That. That's
yeah.
right.
So, but we have seen people just walking around taking pictures and that sort. Most of it's been taking place in different counties.
Okay.
But I think because we support open carry, yeah. we're an open carry community, and there's no reason to come here and make a point because we're okay. You know,
we're fine. Okay.
Good job, dude.
Very good. I was going to ask you about property taxes, but we're so completely out of time. I assume you guys are thinking about how things would change if the property tax proposal gets passed today, gets on the ballot and passes, and what that would mean for law enforcement. And thoughts
we're
at this point?
We're certainly thinking about it. Yeah, we held off because there was no clear plan. Now
right.
that the governor has a plan, I believe, as I think I heard you talking about, there's some amendments to that plan, adding things, subtracting things, and I, you know, we typically wait until the final version is,
sure.
and there's time for panic, and it's not today, and nice. we'll end up doing that later on, but I mean I know that there are, you know, there's a requirement, if you will, in my words, that you will fund public safety, so I fully expect to be funded as a sheriff's office. I think that I have got to fight for funding at the sheriff's office,
yeah.
and I think that's what people elected me for, so I'll keep doing that.
Whether there's
regardless.
Whether there's any roads for your deputies to drive on is another question. That's a subsequent matter. Sheriff Chip Simmons, as always, sir, appreciate the time and what you do to keep us safe, and we'll talk to you again next week.
You bet. Y'all take care.
Oh, I got a text in here. Somebody says, Chip for governor. Interested? I mean, you don't want county administrator, but you want, unless it's elected, but governor's elected.
Governor is elected, yeah.